Welcome to the RUF SCAD podcast. This month we are with Deanna Kilby. Deanna, thanks for joining us.
Yes, it's awesome to be here.
Yeah, like what, a week before you finish?
Yeah, very close to the end.
Just in time. Man, so we're glad that you're here. We will start with the really exciting stuff, like we always tend to do, so people can get to know you a little bit better if they haven't already in 3 years. Tell us where you're from and how you ended up at SCAD. Your story, I think other than Sarah, is a little bit unique of how you ended up at SCAD. So tell us that, like, where are you from and how'd you end up here?
Yeah, so I am originally from Lenoir, North Carolina, which is a very small town. No one ever knows where Lenoir is when I say that's where I'm from. But if you know where Asheville is and you know where Charlotte is, it's basically exactly halfway in between. So it's like at the foot of the Appalachian Mountains. And I, through high school, I thought that I wanted to go into like a scientific field, like marine biology was what I had my heart set on for a very long time. And I always did art like as a hobby, I guess. And then I decided one day that I wanted to do something that I enjoyed as a job. And so
it's reasonable.
Yeah, it was originally game design. Was what I thought I wanted to major in. And so I discovered SCAD by like looking for colleges that had that major. And then I did like some soul searching and ended up on visual effects instead. So yeah, that's why I'm at SCAD.
All right. So I want to rewind a little bit.
Yes.
Why marine biology?
I just like the ocean, honestly. Yeah, it's okay. Like a very simple answer, but
yeah, I mean, that's a fair answer. So how did you, like, tell me about that shift then, going from that to, like, essentially game design, VFX. Like, what prompted you in that direction?
Yeah. So it's kind of an interesting, kind of sad story to tell, but I went to a marine biology camp. And originally when I wanted to go into marine biology, I knew that I wanted to, like, conduct research specifically on, like, deep sea like vertebrates and like weird stuff like
right.
In the deep ocean. And so I was like at this camp and I was talking about how I wanted to like conduct research and like get a PhD and all this stuff. And one of the camp counselors was just like honest with me and he was like, yeah, marine biology is like really oversaturated with researchers. And he's like, pretty much the only jobs that are available right now are like commercial fishery jobs.
That's pretty devastating. Well, how old were you?
I was 15 or 16.
So just old enough to have your dreams crushed.
Yeah,
to be able to recognize the significance of what he had just said.
Yeah. Which, I mean, I'm glad that he told me that, like that he was like brutally honest. And I guess that it wasn't necessarily that it was like commercial fisheries were like the worst thing in the world that I could imagine. But
no.
It was like if the job opportunities that are available like make me this like question my field so much, then why am I in this field to start with? If that makes sense.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So I was like, you know what? I'm going to find a major that I would be happy working at any company.
Yeah.
So it's like more of what I'm doing instead of like who I'm working for.
Sure. Well, yeah. So how did it become game design VFX then?
So I went through a phase where I was like, I want to do something fun as a job. And that for me was, I was looking at a lot of different stuff. And I got into like film, like watching films with a more like critical sense, like in high school, and also like playing games with like a more critical eye, specifically for like storytelling and like visual, like how they convey the narrative visually. And so that's sort of what led me to game design at first, because that's what I did in my free time, was like played video games. And then I decided that I wanted something a bit broader than game design. So I looked at like animation and graphic design, and I actually how I discovered visual effects was I came to a summer seminar at SCAD. And at the time, I was leaning heavily towards graphic design.
Huh. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
And so I came to, the website for the summer seminar where you, sign up for what majors you want mm-hmm. to explore while you're here for a week. And so I put graphic design as the first one, and I was like, I really don't know what other major I want to explore. So I was just, scrolling through the list. And visual effects, alphabetically, was, the last one on the list. And so I came to it, and I, read the description. And I was like, you know what? This sounds fun. We'll just do this and, see what happens, just to, fill out the time. And I got into the classroom the first day that we were doing visual effects stuff. And we opened Maya, which was, a program that I had started learning for, the game design side of things. And I just, realized that was what I wanted to do. It was just, something kind of clicked. And
was it that instantly?
Yeah, it was pretty instantly. Wow. Yeah.
What was it about that? Or is it kind of hard to...
It was, for the summer seminar, since we were only there a week, he basically had us model a box, put a wood texture on it, and then create little pieces of paper and do a wind and a cloth simulation yep. to have the little pieces of paper fly mm-hmm. around. And then we composited them into a photo of an alleyway, in a street.
Yeah, well.
And that was just so much fun. Yeah. I was
I guess probably being able to see the finished product too is helpful on that.
Yeah.
I can put stuff together and it does something.
Yeah. And it's really satisfying to adjust some numbers and mm-hmm. adjust a slider, and then it changes this image drastically.
Yeah. Which is kind of interesting too. I mean, not that that's really necessarily scientific, but it is almost kind of math engineering based.
Yeah.
Sort of to tie everything back together.
Yeah.
Creative application of sort of where some of your interests were beforehand.
Yeah.
That's cool. Were there either particular games or movies or animated series early on that really sparked your interest back when you were trying to figure out what you wanted to do?
Yeah. So when I was really young, I played a lot of the Nintendo games like Kirby and Mario Brothers games.
Wait, which Kirby?
I don't remember which one.
Like SNES or 64?
No, it was on the DS.
Okay, gotcha. You never played, this is totally Kirby's Dream Course, did you?
I don't think so.
That's the most underrated game in the history of Nintendo. Anyway, keep going.
So I played a lot of those games because they weren't stressful games. They were games that the
right.
kid could enjoy. Also right. Cooking Mama, if anyone remembers Cooking Mama.
I actually know what you're talking about, though I never played
it.
That
was a great game. But anyway, so I played those games for a long time, and my dad was always into video games, and he was like, I think you would like the Legend of Zelda games. Mm-hmm. Because they were more combat heavy, but still very whimsical mm-hmm. and fun to play. And so the first Legend of Zelda game that I played was Skyward Sword, and I was instantly hooked. I have played that game I think 3 times at this point, which I am not one to go back and rewatch or reread or replay games. Usually I experience them once and that's good enough for me. But that game is one that I wanted to replay. And then
what was
I played,
it about that game that really registered with you?
I think it's just a combination of everything. It's the visuals are beautiful, the story is fun, the gameplay itself is really fun, the music is beautiful. It's mm-hmm. The best music in any game, arguably. I might offend some people
by
saying that.
That's okay.
But yeah. But yeah, it's just an amazing game. And then I went on to play Twilight Princess and Breath of the Wild, which is my current favorite mm-hmm. game of all time.
That was what was so amazing about Breath of the Wild.
Yeah.
Is for people that were diehard Zelda fans, even back to Ocarina of Time, they would have said that's the best game ever.
Mm-hmm.
I heard a lot of people say, no, Breath of the Wild is the best Zelda game, which is that's a huge claim.
Yeah, it was very risky for them. If you've never played Legend of Zelda games, all of the ones, the early games were very linear. You had a story and you followed that story and you would walk one path all the way to the end. Mm-hmm. there weren't many ways to like deviate from the main story. But Breath of the Wild, they changed it so it was like completely open world.
Yeah.
And you could literally do whatever you wanted. You could do the story in any order. And so that was risky, but it paid off, in my opinion.
Yeah.
It's a great game.
Okay, so early Nintendo, and then Zelda was the bridge. Yes. Any other ones that were relevant in the story?
Yeah, the Assassin's Creed games were where I migrated next. And then I got into... the only console that I had for a while was an Xbox. And so the games that I was interested in, I ended up just like watching other people play them on the internet. And so I was like consuming games as if they were like a film or like an episodic series, which is an interesting way to like consume video games. But
which is, I think, probably becoming more and more common, especially with the prevalence of like Twitch and streaming platforms now.
Yeah, definitely.
So how did that then translate? You said you were interested in games, but thought about doing something a little more broad, which is what led you to VFX. Why not just say game design all the way?
Yeah. You know, that's a good question. I think that what drew me to video games was the storytelling aspect of video games, not so much like the gameplay itself, really. Because I'm not like a huge fan of like battle royale or like racing games.
Right.
Like they have to have a story to like keep me interested. And so I translated, I think playing video games with a focus on storytelling is what led me to watching films through like a more critical lens.
Oh, that's so interesting.
Which I feel like that's a strange like pathway to take.
Yeah, normally I feel like it's the opposite.
Yeah.
It's like it's having the narratival framework that helps people connect with games. Oh, that's so interesting.
Yeah.
Wow.
But yeah, so yeah, I guess that's all I have to say.
Yeah. So just the idea that, okay, I like games, but maybe what I really like about them is just storytelling.
Yeah.
And storytelling can be much broader than that. So then did a little bit of an intensive set up with Maya for what you said it was a week, basically.
Yeah.
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 And then from there, was it like I'm dead set on SCAD?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. I looked at a few other colleges, but not many others had a visual effects major specifically.
Right.
A lot of them sort of like forced you through the film pathway and then let you focus kind of on visual effects at the end. But SCAD had it as its own like separate entity, which I appreciated because I knew that I didn't want to like direct or be like a writer or anything like that. So,
all right. So walk us through the transition then from kind of landing on VFX, really love this kind of stuff, thinking about SCAD, from that to your actual arrival in Savannah and beginning at SCAD.
Yeah. So I, like in a creative sense, like,
Yeah, but also just like connecting the dots of the story too.
So I graduated high school in 2019, and I went to like a dual enrollment program in high school. So I was doing like college courses as high school credit, if that makes sense. So when I came to SCAD, I had like a lot of transfer credits, but I still technically applied as a freshman. So I feel like I kind of was like dropped into SCAD with a lot of stuff already out of the way, especially like, you know, your gen ed and like foundation courses I had completed like at community college. And even now I feel like I kind of did like a speed run of college because I've only been here for 3 years. But even when I got here and I started taking major classes, I never like questioned like, is visual effects what I want to do. It was always just like confirming that this is where I am supposed to be.
So. Yeah. Because that's what to me has always felt not drastically different, but your time at SCAD has been a little different. Because even though you did come in as a freshman, having all those classes out of the way, it probably did feel a little, I mean, I would guess a little disorienting because it wasn't like you were taking all of those classes with everybody else that just started. What was that like, kind of just being thrown in? What was that transition like?
Yeah, it was strange because I was still living with freshmen in freshman housing. I still had to take like the first year experience course, but I was registering for classes as a sophomore my freshman year, which is confusing to say, but I mean, which is beneficial because it gave me earlier registration time so I could get the classes that I need. But it was also kind of strange because I didn't have to take like drawing one or English or math or anything else that, you know, all of the freshmen were taking. I kind of started off in like the art history courses and everything, which really wasn't that big of a deal. Because even in a lot of the freshman classes, there were upperclassmen that had like saved the class until later. So it wasn't like super disorienting. I guess it was more just like, I was technically a freshman, but also technically a sophomore. Mm-hmm. So when people would ask me like, oh, well, what year are you? I would say, well,
complicated. So what was the first couple quarters like at SCAD? Was that a good transition or was it hard or a little bit of both?
It wasn't too bad, honestly. I mean, I had had a close-knit group of friends in high school, but I knew that coming from a small town, I was like the only one from my high school that was going to SCAD and the only person in my hometown that I knew that was going to SCAD. So I like expected to be like on my own for a while, and I was fine with that. And the first two quarters I was here was in 2019, or I guess like 2019 into 2020. And I was kind of laying low, I would say, the first year that I was at SCAD. And I remember thinking in winter quarter, the first year that I was here, I was like, you know, I haven't really made many friends yet, but you know, I still have another quarter in this year. And then, of course, in March.
What we call dramatic irony.
Yeah. It was, I mean, it's funny to think about it in hindsight, but yeah, we went home spring quarter of 2020, the first year that I was here. And that was very, very hard.
Yeah.
But
I'm trying to remember how many quarters you were back home. Everybody was, for the most part, gone spring. Did you come back winter quarter of the next year?
I came back fall quarter.
Fall quarter, okay.
And I was here all of last year. Yeah, that one spring quarter at home was rough. It was also the first visual effects studio was that quarter I was home. And I would say that was the shakiest quarter in terms of me, like, questioning, like, if I was, like, good enough to be, like, a visual effects artist, I guess.
It's a hard time for that. It's already a hard thing to have happen, but especially when you're not even, when you're isolated from the whole community that you're trying to figure out.
Yeah, definitely. And that quarter, especially, I was taking cinematography for visual effects. Mm-hmm. And so I was basically having, I live, you know, sort of in the middle of nowhere. And all of my friends were either still at college or, you know, isolated in their homes. And so I didn't really have anyone to, like, help me. Mm-hmm. But I had to film and act and, like, compose short films for that class.
No wonder you wondered if that was for you.
Yeah.
That sounds pretty brutal.
It was pretty brutal. My mother was very wonderful, though, and she helped me as much as she could.
Wow.
As much as she knew how to do. But, yeah, so.
So came back fall quarter. How would you say that time at home, as rough as it was, like, how did that shape the way you came back to SCAD?
It shaped a lot, honestly. When I came back, I remembered the thought that I had in winter quarter of like, oh, well, I have time to make friends. And then I didn't. And so when I came back to SCAD, you know, I sort of went through this period where I realized like, oh, I need to not let my work consume all of my time and actually like enjoy college and have a social life and meet people and have fun, you know.
Exactly, which is super refreshing to hear someone continue to say at the end of their time at SCAD.
So
tell us a little bit about your story of faith, kind of maybe up until arrival at SCAD, whether that was, you know, growing up in the church or just a pivotal moment with faith or questioning or how you came to faith. What was that like before you got to SCAD?
Yeah, so I mean, I grew up in church, which I feel like is a lot of people's stories at SCAD, like in RUF and the other college ministry groups that I've been in. But I grew up in church, and then I didn't really, like, commit my life to Jesus until I was 16, because up until that point, you know, it was just sort of, like, going to church because my parents went to church.
Yeah.
And then even after I got saved, I continued going to church with my parents because that's the church that I had been going to and everything. But after I got saved, I had a lot of anxiety because I was worried that, well, did I like pray hard enough when I like asked Jesus to come into my life, and like, did I say the correct thing? And so that was like a very tough time for me. And I think, you know, as I sort of made that transition from high school to college, once I got to SCAD, I had to like find a church and find a college ministry. And that, I think I learned a lot, both at, you know, the home church that I was going to, and also at the churches that I started going to in Savannah. It was just this like slow realization that it's like salvation is not anything that I can like earn. And it's not anything that I have done, and it's a free gift from God. And so that was a very important realization for me to have.
Yeah, I feel like the thing you're describing is actually a very, honestly, pretty common thing that most of us feel. It's like we can recognize on the one hand, Jesus died for me, yet all of us want some degree of assurance. Yeah. Like we want to know that this actually applies to me. And the easiest route, it feels like often what we're sort of trained to do is like, sort of like do a self-diagnosis, like a self-analysis, like, okay, did I do it right? Is my faith strong enough? Like, have I done the right things that would allow that to be true of me? And like the great irony of that is, it's like, it's no longer actually predicated on the free offer of the gospel at that point. It actually ends up being a works-based thing, which is, it's actually really interesting too, because like there's sort of a version of that at SCAD in the way that we often think about career too. You know, it's like my value is sort of what I can fabricate within myself and then present back out.
Yeah.
So how did you begin to sort of deconstruct some of that? Like, how did you begin to feel more sense of assurance?
I would say just talking to a lot of different people who had similar experiences, especially talking to Claire, because I feel like she had a very similar like coming to faith story as I did. And so it was assuring to hear that like I wasn't the only one who had like struggled with anxiety like related to that like specific idea of like, have I done enough, you know?
Yeah.
And so it was just like listening to sermons and talking to people, and you know, I still find myself sometimes like having similar thoughts, but now at least I can like recognize them and stop them before they, you know, have an impact on me, you know. So I would say it was just like a matter of learning from other believers.
Sure. I mean, it's one of the things that we try to prioritize and be honest about in, I mean, not in RUF, but hopefully not just in RUF. Yeah. It's like, if we're not honest about the reality of doubt, it's like, if I'm actually not honest about the reality of doubt, then I'm not preaching the same gospel that I believe myself. Like, I believe in the gospel alongside of doubt. Like, we have imperfect faiths because we are imperfect sinners. And like the good news of our faith is not in the magnitude of it, but in the object of it. And it's like, that's an ongoing process, which is why I think it's actually really helpful for people like you to express that. It's like, yeah, I definitely was there, and I still feel like I'm there sometimes, even though I still totally trust that Jesus is who he says he is and has done what he says he's done. One of the other things we talk a lot about is how these two worlds that we find ourselves in as Christians at SCAD collide in ways that don't always feel super obvious. In other words, the world of faith in the church, but then the world of creativity. What was it like for you then to show up at SCAD as someone who was a follower of Jesus, but also doing these creative things that often can feel like they're in separate worlds? Like, was that challenging, or did it like kind of help make sense of some things? Like, what was that like?
Yeah, I would say that it was challenging. But it was also, I would say it was more challenging in high school, because I was growing up in a small town. There weren't a lot of people who were pursuing like creative industries that were also Christians. Like those two worlds didn't necessarily overlap in my town.
Even farther apart. Yeah, that makes sense.
And so when I got to SCAD and I met Christians who were also in a creative field, it was very encouraging, because I felt like there were other people who could, like, sort of apply Christianity to their, like, creative expression.
Yeah, it's actually, like, it's so interesting because I get this question a lot, sometimes, like, from prospective parents, typically from prospective parents who have students thinking about SCAD. It's like, you know, the whole narrative of my child grew up in the church and, like, either they are or, like, I think they're a Christian, but I'm just terrified of them going to a place like SCAD and, like, you know, the big bad artistic world just gonna, like, brainwash them. And, like, and I'm honest, what I say is, like, honestly, there's tons of people who are at SCAD and in RUF who would say, I have grown so much more as a follower of Jesus since I've been here. Because what ends up happening is the thing that was always true of your heart that you desired was just going to, you were going to grow in that direction wherever you went. Mm-hmm. You know, it might just expedite it at SCAD. But it makes sense where, like, you know, if RUF at SCAD is a collection of people who kind of have felt that tension, it makes sense that for a lot of us, this might be the first time we've kind of felt like there's a place for us as a Christian who's a creative person.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just think it's so beautiful to hear.
Yeah.
So if anybody's listening and your child is thinking about going to SCAD, like, there's good news on the horizon. Like, yes, it can work.
Definitely.
It can definitely work. All right. So you are in the throes of a final project right now.
Yes, I am.
Because you are about to graduate.
Yes.
Tell us as much or as little as you want to about the project you've been working on.
Yeah. So I... Well, do you want to hear about Studio One or Studio Two? Because I did, like, two separate.
You can tell us about both. I just didn't want you to, you know, preemptively, like, spoil the surprise if we to wait until the actual release.
There's no surprise. I will spoil it gladly. So for Studio One, so the visual effects senior studios are set up in a way that's a little bit different from the other major studios. So we do very individualized projects because in visual effects you're encouraged to specialize in a certain area. So for Studio One, I focused on compositing, and I did like a super short film about a robot exploring, like, this wasteland that's been affected by, like, pollution and climate change. And it was interesting to see it from start to finish because I had started developing the concept in the concept development class, but then I had to scale it back a lot for Studio One because I had to finish it in one quarter. But it was a great project, and I'm proud of how it turned out. And then for Studio Two, I'm doing more of a lighting exploration. I am recreating three scenes from Guillermo del Toro films. Nice. I watch a lot of his movies.
Nice. Which films?
Pan's Labyrinth.
Got to.
Crimson
Got
Peak to.
Yeah.
And Shape of Water. Because, well, so I've watched a lot of his movies, and I've noticed that for some reason there's a lot of bathtubs in his movies.
I never thought about that, but that is so true. Wow.
Yeah. So I'm doing, like, three bathtub scenes.
That kind of blew my mind a little bit. That's kind of the Stanley Kubrick thing, too. Like, what is it with that? Like, pivotal scenes that take place in a bathroom?
Yeah, it's... I don't know. I feel like there's some film theory, like...
You have planned, like, the rest of my afternoon out now.
Yeah.
To figure this out. Okay, so keep going.
Yeah.
Tell Toro scenes.
Doing, like, a CG recreation of the bathtubs from those three films and mashing the lighting just to do, like, an exploration of, like, photorealistic lighting for full CG. And so that's the project that I am finishing up now, and I'm almost done with it. I'm very excited.
Yeah. You've been working hard on it.
Yeah.
I will give you plenty of credit. Like, you have been really investing yourself into it.
Yeah. It's been a lot of work, but it's been very rewarding, especially since this is, like, the first... Studio One and Studio Two are the first projects where I have had complete creative freedom, and I can do literally anything that I wanted. And so that's been just a lot of fun to be able to do for my last year.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I'm curious for you, you know, we talked a little bit about what led you into VFX in the first place. But I know for whatever creative thing that you guys land on, there are things that are just sort of intrinsically gratifying about it. I would love to hear you talk about VFX, like, what it is about that particularly that just, like, allows your creativity to flourish. Like, what is it about VFX that really resonates with you?
So one thing that I love about visual effects, and I don't know if this is a strange thing to enjoy, but with visual effects, it's almost like if you do it well, people don't notice it.
Yep. Oh man, I know exactly what you mean.
Which is so exciting.
Yes. Okay, look, audio engineering is the exact same thing.
Okay, yeah.
So I have a category for this. Keep going. This is good.
Yeah, so a lot of visual effects is flashier stuff. If you think of like Marvel movies,
sure.
Like obviously, you know, that gets a lot of attention for visual effects specifically. But for a lot of other films, it's completely invisible. Like, you know, if your visual effects can be painting out a sign on a truck that drives in the back of a shot, or like cleaning up dirt on an actor's face, or changing their eye color, or something that, you know, you wouldn't notice unless you saw like the original, what they filmed originally.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I mean, a lot of visual effects is just trying to make your work go unnoticed, basically.
So I think a lot of people would look at, I think this is such a fascinating thing to talk about. I think a lot of people would look at that and think like, where's the joy in that?
Mm-hmm.
If in some sense your goal is to be as unacknowledged as possible, like,
yeah,
what is it about that you that's really exciting?
A motorcycle. I don't really know why it's exciting, to be honest. You know, even when I did like traditional art as a hobby, you know, in high school, like drawing and painting, I found it really satisfying to like hide hidden like messages or meanings in pieces. And it's rewarding to know what you did without having other people know about it.
Yeah.
If that makes
sense.
Yeah,
there's an intrinsic value in it. There's actually something really beautiful about that too, because what that means is like you are truly serving the craft,
mm-hmm,
in the most like servant way possible.
Yeah.
Again, because if you do it right, nobody other than the people that actually know the technical parts of what you're doing will ever notice.
Yeah.
Which means that you are truly serving the thing in the most like sacrificial way possible.
Yeah.
Which I actually do think is, there's something that's just really cool about that. That is how I've always described audio engineering to people. I love that that's how you describe VFX. It's like, mm-hmm, actually, you only notice it if somebody does a bad job.
Yeah.
Because it's distracting.
Yeah.
And that's bad if it's distracting.
Yes, exactly.
Man, you're like speaking my language. I get it. Which is really cool, though, because what that means is you're shaping the way the story gets presented,
mm-hmm,
in ways that people aren't even explicitly aware of as they're watching it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I always think there's just something special about people that really are devoted to a lot of the behind the scenes work. Cause I think, mm-hmm, I mean, I'm sure you deal with this all the time, that the conception of VFX is the like kind of 2-3% of stuff where it's like big action explosion or like big AAA video game, like really detailed, hyper-focused VFX kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, that's not most of it. At least my impression is that's not most of it. How for you do these ideas of faith and creativity intersect? I know that's a big question.
Yeah, it is a big question. I guess that was one question that I had for a very long time. And I don't think I really ever had an answer until I came to RUF. And I'm just going to kind of reiterate what you have said. That, you know, God is a creative God. He created the universe and everything in it, and he made us in his image and gave us the desire to be creative. And so it's just an element of creating that desire that he gave to us. So,
even as you're talking about VFX stuff, like, I think there's a category of observation that we lack often when we think about, okay, God's revealed himself in creation, and yes, we can see it very clearly in the big majestic stuff, but I really don't know how often we take the time to really observe like the minute details of things.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think about all the things that we overlook that are necessary for the creation not just to function as it does, but also for the things to propagate beauty in the ways that they do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, man, that kind of feels a little similar to how you're describing VFX. It's like all of these pieces are necessary for the story to be told,
mm-hmm,
yet like millions of them go unacknowledged, but they're still there. And there's still something valuable about them being there that's necessary.
Yeah, definitely.
I just think that's very liberating to have a vision of creativity that's that broad. Mm-hmm. That's really cool. What are either games or films or animated series that you have been into lately that we need to be aware of?
Oh, recently? Well, of course, I've been going through Guillermo del Toro's filmography.
I was going to ask, so which one's your favorite so far?
Ooh, that's also a good question. For a while, it was Pan's Labyrinth.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's an amazing movie. If I can talk about the special effects and visual effects in that movie, Doug Jones. If you don't know who Doug Jones is, he's an actor who does a lot of like creature roles, and he played the faun in Pan's Labyrinth, also the fish in Shape of Water.
Oh, I didn't realize that's amazing.
Yeah, so he's cool. He's the guy under the makeup a lot of times.
Wow, that kind of blew my mind a little bit, too.
So I think he was also the Pale Man in Pan's Labyrinth.
Come on, with the
hands. Yeah, the hand
That's
eyes.
What everybody remembers about that movie.
Yeah, yeah, that's the creepiest reason. Yeah. But yeah, so of course, like, the special effects makeup is phenomenal in all of his movies. But also, like, the visual effects support of the special effects makeup. So for the faun and the pale man specifically, if I'm remembering correctly, you know, the faun's legs don't bend like a human's legs. And so in the areas of Doug Jones's legs that were outside of the costume, they would just put like a green screen suit on those areas basically.
Wow.
And so he had like these like extra legs that would extend out of his, and then in post they would remove his actual legs.
That's next level. Wow.
Yeah, and same for the Pale Man, because the Pale Man has, you know, those like skinny chicken legs, so they had to remove a lot of like his body from the shots and everything, which is, it's super interesting to see how like practical effects and, you know, digital visual effects sort of intertwine in movies.
I think
like
that proves the point you made earlier. Like, when I think about Pan's Labyrinth, I don't think about all of the pieces that went, like, I think about the whole, and it's been a while since I've seen that movie, but I remember vividly just the image of that creature.
Yeah.
And I don't remember the little individual pieces that made it up, but I just remember, like, the feeling of terror and watching the movements of this thing. It's like, that absolutely proves the point you made a minute ago.
Yeah.
Okay, so you said for a long time it was Pan's Labyrinth. Does that mean that something has surpassed Pan's Labyrinth?
I don't know. I mean, the more that I have sort of looked into the visuals of his movies, especially Shape of Water and Crimson Peak, I would say that, I mean, all of his movies are equally beautiful. From a story perspective, I would say probably Pan's Labyrinth is still my favorite. But in terms of visuals, Shape of Water is just a gorgeous movie. If you haven't seen it, I would recommend it.
That's
for the visuals
only
alone.
Out, I think, that you could have convinced me with The Shape of Water. Because visually, it is incredibly stunning.
Yeah.
I just, like, something didn't connect with me with Shape of Water.
That's understandable.
But it was a beautiful movie, no question.
Yeah, the lighting is gorgeous, having stared at it for 10 weeks now.
Man, I'm surprised you're not sick of it by now, or are you?
No, I want to watch more of his movies. I want to watch a lot of his older stuff, because I feel like most of his films that I've seen are his more recent movies and everything.
Wasn't there a game that he had a hand in?
Yes, Death Stranding.
That's right. I feel dumb for missing that one now. Yeah.
Yeah, that's also a very strange game. One of the other games that I consumed as a movie because it's a very cinematic game, so I didn't actually play it. I just watched someone else play it.
I'm backtracking big time, but I'm putting two things together that you were just talking about. Thinking about your history with marine biology and your proclivity for games, did you ever play a game called Subnautica?
I didn't. That was one that I watched.
No, you missed it then.
I know. I feel like I would have loved to play that game.
You would have loved it.
Yes.
Oh, man. It makes me sad that you didn't get the joy of that game.
Yeah. It's an amazing game. I mean, from watching others play it, it's stunning. And it has, like, that sense of exploration that I think Breath of the Wild also has.
Yes, for sure. I could almost make a case that it has a little bit of a Del Toro vibe.
Yeah.
A little bit.
I would agree with that.
Mm-hmm. All right, another game then. You gave us some movies, a game that we should know about that you have either been into recently or one that was pivotal for you.
Well, one game that I have not played, but I think was just so creative in how they did the visuals, and it's also just like visually, like it's a visually stunning game, is the most recent God of War game.
Yeah.
It, one fact that I learned, this was also a game that I consumed by watching someone else play it. And it's a very good game to do that because they were very focused on the cinematography of the game. And there are no loading screens in the God of War
no
game.
No cuts either, right?
No, no cuts. It's all one continuous camera
movement.
I can't
even imagine that.
And this game is like, I don't remember how many hours it is, but it's a massive game. And the camera never cuts. It never... It's always just following the characters and moving around
them.
That
sounds like a technical nightmare.
It's I don't know how they did it. It's amazing. But they, yeah, I mean, a lot of like, I don't know much about game design, but it's a lot of like closing doors so that you can't see what they've unloaded.
Sneaky.
And
yeah.
Panning the camera around, and a lot of trickery, which they do in films too.
Sure.
But yeah.
All right, so as you look back on your time at SCAD and in Savannah, what stand out as like the meaningful or significant things that you're really going to miss?
We can get sentimental, right? Yeah, we can get sentimental. Yeah, we can get sentimental. I think the biggest thing that I'm scared of, like moving to a new city, is that I'm afraid I'm like going to lose the connections that I've made in Savannah, because I feel like with SCAD specifically. Like all of the, even like all of the people in my major, but even broader, the people in the school itself are going to jobs like all over the country. And so it's like kind of daunting to realize that I'm not going to be in the same city with a lot of the people that I have formed connections with. And so that's a little bit scary, but it's also a little exciting because I know that there's going to be new people in wherever I end up, that are going to be, you know, exciting and teach me new things and everything as well. So
just thinking about connecting your story here at SCAD full circle, what you were saying earlier about your first couple quarters here and just realizing like, man, I just like, I don't have the connections of friends that I really want. And now for you to look back and say, that's what I'm going to miss most is the friends I was able to make while I'm here. That's, man, that's really good stuff.
Yeah.
All right, we'll ask the really controversial questions now. What were your go-to spots or coffee shops in Savannah? This can be a very divisive question.
Yeah.
So I would just be very careful.
Yes. As far as coffee shops, I am a big fan of Foxy Loxy.
Mm-hmm.
Because they also sell tacos.
Man, you can make a whole day at Foxy Loxy if you're not careful.
You really can. I mean, they have everything, like chips and guac, tacos, coffee, anything you can want. Foxy
I mean,
Loxy
you can
has.
Make a day out of it.
You
and
can.
I have made a day out of it before.
Yeah.
All right, other than coffee shops, things or places that you're going to miss in Savannah?
Definitely Tybee. I mean, I wish I had more time to go to Tybee. I collect shark teeth. So it was a big hobby to just like go and look for hours for to find five teeth.
Yep.
But yeah.
So what's on the horizon next?
So I'm still looking for a job, but hopefully I'll be either in a remote position or in Atlanta. That would be my top city. Applying for a lot of compositing jobs, and yeah, that's pretty much it.
So I'll give you the last word.
Okay.
A week away from graduation, what would you like to leave all of us with on your way out of Savannah?
Yeah. As far as like advice goes, I said this at Senior Semnoff, but I'm going to say it again because I think it's important. Your work here at SCAD is important. I'm not saying that it's not important, but also don't let it consume your life and consume all of your time. It's important to take time to worship and fellowship and rest, because you need rest, or eventually you're going to get so burned out that your body is going to force you to rest, and that's never a good situation. So
what I love most about that is all of the people that I've heard say that on their way out are the people who did among the most remarkable work. So it's not like, oh, I just kind of stopped caring about making good stuff so I could do this. Like, no, both can be true. And I would argue that both actually, when one is true alongside the others, how they both amplify.
Yeah.
So, definitely. Deanna, we're going to miss you, but it has been such a joy to have you around these 3 years. And we're grateful for you. And we appreciate you being on the podcast and look forward to you returning to Savannah with frequency to see us.
Yes, I definitely will.
Until next time. Thanks, Deanna.
Thank you.